I'm going to make a few comments, just a little question, but next month it'll go to the planning board, and it'll come to you.
Okay, then. Right. Oh, I know how to keep them. No problem.
Okay, if everybody would like to come in and take your seats, we're going to go ahead and get the land use committee meeting started.
Yeah. I screwed up. I was busy having lunch with Zach.
Seven. Okay, I got seven.
All right, let's let the record reflect. We have Councilwoman Diller and Councilwoman Kilpatrick, my co-chair Joe Retta, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Weiner, Councilman Smiley, and my aide Valerie will be taking the notes. Motion on the minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second.
No additions. Okay, minutes are approved.
You wanted to do your whole presentation even at the bottom first?
No, I was going to...
You're going to just do a small one up here.
Okay, that's what I thought you said. Okay, first item on the agenda is Councilwoman Diller.
Yes, this is Ordinance 15004. I am very excited about the proposed plan for what is known in Newark as the Avon plant. And we have Mr. Heisler, but I believe General Manager Fogarty would like to make a few comments before...
And a small presentation. Yeah, if you like that better, sure. Okay.
Wanted to make sure I was in the right place. We're very excited about the Avon project coming forth, and it was our my desire, because this will be my last meeting with you, to do the presentation on Avon today. We also wanted to make sure that all of the detail, all of the attention to detailing information that the council needs and wants to know would be available. So today we will not be doing the presentation, but I wanted to share with you that we see this as an incredible opportunity. You have an industrial area with an aging or outdated distribution center that is transitioning to a mixed-use project that really is going to be mixed-use. It'll have expanded office, it'll have residential, it'll have some local services, and it is something the residents, generally speaking, almost all the residents that I've spoken to support the idea of having this kind of a use rather than an industrial use. From the county's standpoint, from land use's standpoint, we see a trigger for Route 273. We see future investment, we see repurposing, and we see it as a very exciting anchor. So that will come to you next month, but it's we're thrilled.
Good. Okay, just a little record keeping. Councilman Cartier has joined us, and we did hear that Councilman Bell, Bullock, Powers, and Street will not be here. Okay, have the applicant come forward for a presentation.
You're totally postponing it?
Yeah.
Not even that?
Okay. Totally postponed. So this will not be up for a vote. Okay. Next item on the agenda, Councilman Smiley.
Yes, this is Ordinance 14-075, the revised rezoning map, Newcastle 100, west side of Bear Christiana Road, Route 7, north side of Newtown Road, and south of Rivers End Drive. This is for 3 one-story buildings. I will say that this has been well vetted in the area. We had numerous meetings with the community. They even met with DelDOT on some issues. This does comprise more parcels than was originally intended, but at land uses urging, the owner has purchased several residential properties along Route 7 from, let's say, some homeowners who are no longer happy with the traffic pattern, as well as a defunct business. So with that, I will turn it over to anyone who wishes to speak.
I think General Manager Fogarty will give a presentation.
Thank you very much. We're just waiting for it to come up. Thanks. That's it.
Don't pay attention to top left. That's where they hung me an effigy.
Right, exactly. I think the councilman gave a very good introduction, certainly as to the location. Next slide, Jim. The project before us is six parcels, and as you can see from this map, they are, or this graphic, across the street is zoned OR. The six parcels all are currently zoned NC10, and they will, in a cohesive manner, go forward into neighborhood commercial. Next slide, please. You can see here the one, that's the pizza parlor, I believe, or the former pizza parlor is the CN. The rest of it is NC10. And what's very exciting when we get to the next slide is that originally this came in only as one parcel, or a part of a parcel with the residential parcels left out, and also the other remnant was the pizza parlor. So you had the request for neighborhood commercial, you had two residential homes, and then you had another commercial site. In talking with the applicant, the applicant's representative, Mr. Tarabicos, who I believe is here today, they went out, they did an amazing job working with the community. We joined them, but they really did the heavy lifting on this. And what they've come back with, if you look at the next slide, and of course, Councilman Smiley had a part in all of this, it's come in as a cohesive project. It's 5.3 acres, 50% of it is open space, and let's go to the next graphic. There's a large buffer in front. There's a sort of a green central area for some activity. There's also, if you look between those two buildings on the middle and the right-hand side, there's an open space area. And then if we can go back just one, Jim, and you're looking at 14,000 square feet of retail, separate for building for bank, separate building for a restaurant, and 2.68 acres of open space. So the site plan was not only completely redone to have a cohesive plan, it also included all the parcels so that you don't have a situation where you have a couple remnant residential left in the middle between two commercial sites. And if you go to the last slide, there were several iterations. The applicant worked with the county and the community and came back with really quality buildings with stone. The early iterations for the first application did not look like this. Last slide, we believe that this is an asset to the community. We're delighted to work with the applicant, the applicant's representative, the community, and Councilman Smiley. Questions?
Questions from members of council. Councilman Weiner.
Yes, I'd like to talk about the bike ped friendliness and
next
transit
slide,
orientation.
Councilman Weiner's slide.
We're not talking. You're looking at pictures.
So there will be the parking, the bike parking, the bike lane, the sidewalk frontage, all of that will be provided. Brad, do you want to join me? So how can...
Let the record reflect that I'm happy.
Let the record reflect I'm requesting changes.
Is Brad done?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Additional questions from members of council. Councilman Cartier.
I think it's interesting to look at a plan like this. So, if, just to be clear, folks in the adjacent neighborhoods could actually walk to these commercial amenities along Route 7, come out of the neighborhood and walk over and get to these places.
Yes, and that was part of the work with the community. Brad?
Is this for me? Councilwoman Kirkpatrick.
Thank you. I just want to note that we probably will never see another general manager that summons her staff like this.
I like it much better when we're around the table, so it's much more subtle.
So do we.
At the rate we're going, we may never see another general manager.
Councilman Clardy, a follow-up question.
Just to review again the offerings or the businesses, commercial retail, that is going to be on this site, if you go back maybe a slide or two. So I just want to see that again. So retail, okay, bank, and restaurant. And what is planned in the 14,000 square foot of retail? Does anybody have an idea about that?
I would say we have Larry Tarabicos and Sophia Tarabicos, and they can, I know what we've discussed with them, but I think it would be better for them to tell you what they have commitments on at this point in time.
Is the rumor Lowe's is going to move over there?
Oh, that's already up, and that's where the building supplies will be coming from. If they can get in the parking lot from all of those that didn't want it there 3 years ago.
Councilman Smiley.
I'm not sure if they have any contracts in there. I will tell you this. There will be no bar. There will be no package store. And I yielded there will be no massage parlors either.
Councilman Weiner.
Yes, I would like to applaud the Land Use Department and the applicant and the councilman of the district for the architectural excellence and the quality of the construction materials.
Additional questions, members of council? Co-Chair Weta.
Thank you. I was at a couple of meetings that they had with the developer and with their lawyer, Mr. Tarabicos, and George was there too, and the public. And they reached out to the public in that neighborhood to ask them what they would like and what they dislike. And they had a couple meetings on it, and with that, I think the public had a lot of input, and the developer really took a lot of it to thought and put it all together with what they're going to do. So I think this is a good project.
Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, I just want to say it was a pleasure working with Land Use, the developer, as well as the owner of the property who actually came and sat in on the meetings with the public and was there and was accessible. And, yeah, I mean, they even went so far as there are two different communities that abut the back of this. So they will each have a different type of fencing to abut their community because they didn't both want the same thing. So they even went so far as to allow them the choice of the barrier and the buffer. So I appreciate it.
Additional questions from members of council? Larry, you want to make a presentation? Sophia?
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of council. General Manager Fogarty presented a chunk of my presentation, but I'm not sending her any portion of my fee. I wanted to go over a few things. Is our PowerPoint up there? Okay, there we go. And let me first say that yes, the Land Use Department was great. I want to give credit to Councilman Smiley's aide, Tara, who was fantastic working with Sophia to set up all the community meetings we had, because she was very, very helpful. And Councilman Smiley was there at every single meeting, and it kind of overlaps, so Councilman Retta was there as well. And it was a collaboration by everybody involved. And you will hear from Phil Singer, who led the focus group that met with us today. And, yeah, I think this is one that we can all be proud of, that we, you know, we did a good job on all the way around. There are a few things. I'll try to fill in the blanks. So Ms. Fogarty's correct. We started off with a smaller project, and Land Use Department rightfully pointed out that it really wasn't the comprehensive development of the parcels. It was leaving a couple of orphaned homes here and not really taking them into account. So we went back to the drawing board. There's a abandoned vacant pizza shop over here that's already zoned commercial. So we wanted to incorporate all these properties together and take into consideration all of the comments from the Land Use Department and the community. Sophia handed you a declaration of restrictions that we prepared for this project that are very, very thorough, very detailed, and hopefully could be used for other projects as well. You know, painstakingly, numerous meetings with the community, we developed these restrictions. I did want to point out a few things. Councilman Weiner, I wanted to point out in response to your question, there are three bike racks on site. The bike lane all along Route 7 and Newtown Road. There's pedestrian connections, but, and again, really, I think some of the subtle improvements that the Land Use Department made to this plan that, okay, it's mostly a retail center, but how can we make it more pedestrian-friendly and gathering point? There is actually a gazebo. How many times do you see a gazebo in an open space area on a retail center with sidewalks connecting through the green space? And this is all green space as well. So there's a hope, at a minimum, that we'll have more. And I think that the communities that are not presently going to be connected directly to the center, because right now you have a major concern out there in Newtown Village with crime, with people cutting through neighborhoods. Their biggest concern was to keep people out of their community. I think ultimately you're going to find those communities are going to want connections directly to the center. I think it will be a place where people who live at Crossings at Christiana and Newtown Village will go to gather. Maybe they will use the gazebo. Maybe they'll go to the restaurant and hang around in the center afterwards, go to the shops, go to the bank. I think it gives us opportunity to see this develop here. And those are the subtle things that I think Ms. Fogarty has added to every project since she's been here. Those are the things that are subtle, and you don't really see them unless you look really closely at these plans. I want to ask you, there was a traffic impact study done for this relatively small project of 20-some thousand square feet. 15 intersections had to be studied. I don't remember. The study was at least 30,000. Is that right, Tony? Yeah. So everything passed. Everything was fine. We have no issues with traffic. I do want to acknowledge Mr. Vary. Tony Vary is here, and also the engineers from Duffield Associates who did a great job on this plan. And the other thing is access. We had a lot of discussions with DelDOT, who flip-flopped on us three times on access. And actually, state legislators, particularly Senator Townsend, got involved and helped on that issue. But we will have access from the signal at Newtown Road. There'll be a left on Newtown. We'll be able to come in the back of the site. And then there's rights in, rights out here, and rights in, rights out here as well. The deed restrictions are very comprehensive. They have objectionable uses that are prohibited, the appearance of the buildings. I think Councilman Weiner pointed out architectural appearance of the buildings. This is, I think, the highest architectural standards in that corridor down there. Granted, the new Lowe's looks pretty good for a Lowe's, but I think this is the nicest you're going to find in that area down there right now. I'm sure that if and when Mr. Heisler builds Lincoln Center across the street, it'll be even nicer, but it's not there yet, so we're setting the tone. Soon. Even the signage, as you'll see, and this is in the deed restrictions, even the signage is designed in a manner. I mean, every meeting we went to, and Phil Singer will say this, I think, is the people who live in Crossings at Christiana said, we want you to make this look like Hokesson. I mean, why aren't we good enough to have Hokesson? So everything was designed to have a look that was good for the community. And I think, again, following Eileen Fogarty's is that, you know, you don't have a right to a rezoning. A rezoning requires that you do something extra to earn it. And that's what we did here. So there's things in the deed restrictions that talk about cleanliness, maintenance of the property, routine operations, lighting, security. I've skipped a few things. Oh, a couple more things, Councilman Weiner, I skipped ahead as I got excited about the gazebo and the connectivity. There's also a bus shelter. There's also 9 handicap parking spaces on site. I know, Councilman Cartier, you often ask about handicap parking. And so there's a lot of pedestrian and bike-friendly provisions on this plan. I don't think we missed anything in the list of items that are typically looked at here. So it's not a huge project, but it's got significant effect. What's happened is that, and I don't know how DelDOT got away with it, frankly. When DelDOT widened Route 7 down there, which used to be a country road, it truly was a country road, and you have homes fronting on Route 7. A lot of them have disappeared over the years because developments have come in. Newtown Village, Crossings at Christiana, et cetera. But there's still a handful of homes that were scattered along Route 7. It probably wasn't real pleasant to live there in the last 10 years as development has grown south. But at least it was only a 2-lane road. Now you have a major 4-lane highway. And those homes are simply not inhabitable any longer as homes. I don't know how DelDOT didn't have to compensate those people for the diminution in the value of their homes, probably because none of them asked for it. But I think all of those people would have had a class action case, frankly, everybody along Route 7 there to go and get compensated for the damage to their homes. If you look north of here, there's one more segment of a cluster of homes, I think about 5. 3 of them are already in non-residential use. There's an accountant's office, there's a daycare center, I think maybe 1 or 2 might still be used as a home, and that's not going to last. So what we did was try to look at this comprehensively, bring everybody to the table. I can assure you the first few meetings where there were more than 100 people there, it wasn't well received initially. And I think it developed into being a – I think our goal was how can we make it a project that the community is going to view as an asset to their community, and I think that's where we came out on this. But I'll let them speak for themselves. So I think I covered all of the points that I wanted to and hopefully won't need to speak next Tuesday. But I'm happy to answer any questions.
One real fast, Larry, just because I've seen this here, and it may have already been in here, and if it was, I apologize. But the deed restrictions private or?
No, the deed restrictions will run in favor of the crossings at Christiana. It was agreed amongst all the communities. We have to have one party to enforce them. So the crossings at Christiana, I don't know where it shows up, but Crossings at Christiana, which is our closest neighbor, they will have the right to, let's see, this plan shows it pretty well. They are here. This is their community right here. We talked about this at a recent meeting. I will say there's a fairly high density here. You can see it. Fairly high density residential. Not a whole lot of it has stayed very nice. But the Crossings at Christiana, age-restricted community, deed-restricted community, where the residents pay to maintain their properties. Benchmark Builder, I worked on that project here. I did that rezoning for Benchmark 20 years ago. That project looks as good today, probably better with all the landscaping. It looks better than it did when it was first built, but it's the only one in that area. So these deed restrictions will run in favor of Crossings at Christiana. They will not be amended without their consent. There's also provision in there that gives them the ability to be reimbursed if they have to expend any legal fees or costs to enforce the restrictions.
Yeah, I remember that project really well. I think probably the first time I met you.
That's right.
I was president of 740. Councilman Cartier.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I see the planning logic of creating an entire site of commercial neighborhood here with amenities that are directly adjacent to the, dense communities that are behind it, so people are going to get, tremendous value out of this. And also, depending on the type of commercial that goes in the commercial building on the left. One other question I had is how are we engineering the drainage from the site?
I'm going to let Jeff or Steve come up to answer that one. They'll probably be able to respond to that better than me. It's the Steve Gorski, who's engineer with Duffield Associates.
Yeah, Steve Gorski, Duffield Associates. We have, this is a kind of unique site. It drains in five different ways. Yeah, like I said, it's kind of in a peak area. The high point in the road is right about here. So we have five different directions of flow. They're all going to be captured by bioretention areas that meet the current stormwater regulations for quantity, quality, control as needed.
Additional questions, members of the council? Seeing none, turning to the public. Oh, Councilman Weiner.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Tarabikas, I first appreciate the deed restriction verbiage. I think it's very good. And as you said, it should be in the library of any civic group or civic umbrella group as a good model. I particularly like paragraph 11. It's balanced, where the CDMC can recover its costs and legal fees as long as their actions are a result of a bona fide and legitimate violation, and further, they shall prevail, and then require them to attempt in good faith to resolve, I think, is excellent language. I wanted to ask some questions about the traffic impact study, a standard question. And, of course, you've stated that the traffic studies show that the intersections are working by DLDOT standards. Were there any turning movements that already were in LOSD or worse? And of course, we know that when you're redeveloping, the goal is not to make them any worse with whatever level they're in already, but it's just a question that I like to always ask.
Sure. So there were 15 intersections that were studied.
And typically the constraining one is the turning movement, left turning movement during rush hour.
We have none of the vectors, none of the turning movements at any of the intersections have actually any limitations, including Route 7 and Newtown Road. Even after development, all turning movements were at level of service C, as in CAT or better. Likewise with Song Smith Drive, the other intersection, Rivers End. So Rivers End, likewise, all movements C or B or better. The only intersection, and you'll note that the one intersection that we studied, which is not studied under the UDC, but under DLDOT's new regulations, is studied. So it was outside the scope required for level of service standards, but required by DLDOT for informational purposes, was at 7 and 40. And as you'll recall, just 3 years ago when we came forward with the Governor Square rezoning for Lowe's, that intersection operated at an acceptable level of service. I won't get overly technical with you, but because of DLDOT's change in how they, what is the term now, Steve? You're going to remind me, it was an overlap, is an overlap turning radius going westbound on Route 40. They looked at it a certain way for Governor Square. They've looked at it now a different way for this project. And so in their analysis, that intersection has in that movement a level of service E. But it's not part of our standards under the UDC, so it doesn't impact the project. But that was the only resulting intersection that had an E. And I'll say it's just barely an E, so that it is a 58-second delay, and 55 is what turns you from a D to an E. But that's the only movement that has any issues.
I appreciate the opportunity to have this colloquy with you to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Turning now to the public, anybody from the public have any questions, comments, or concerns they want to share with the council?
Do you want to speak? Came all this way to the big city, you might as well.
Yes, I was expecting a small room around a table, very casual. So we're and here I am. My name is Phil Singer. I am a homeowner in the Crossings of Christiana community, a 55-plus community. I'm on the board of the Maintenance Corporation, and I was invited to a meeting in the early summer of last year at the Bear Library, and it was the first that I've heard about this Newtown Square development. And as Larry said, there were a number of people there, and I guess they were there to make a big noise and complaint. They didn't want this commercial development next to their community. And why I'm here today is that what culminated from several meetings after that first meeting, as it's been expressed three or four times already today by Councilman Smiley and Mr. Redder and Larry himself and a couple other people, it was a very rewarding experience. That's what I can say. It was a very rewarding experience. Led by Larry and his team, they did involve the communities surrounding this project to the extent that the communities bought into it hook, line, and sinker. Eileen Fogarty, who was at the first meeting, one of the issues that I initially brought up was that I was concerned with green space between the properties and also the quality of the actual materials in the buildings and what it would look like. And that's where the focus sort of came, like we want a community like Hockessin and we want green space. We don't want a bunch of trees cut down. And how is this commercial property going to work with the community? Well, what culminated was this deed restrictions, and I think everybody here has already read them, and they are pretty extensive, and it was a lot of suggestions from the community. Tony Vera, the developer, and Larry and everybody else, just whatever you guys need to make this thing work. And it was just a real rewarding experience working with the developer and working with the communities. The communities believe that, and the communities, I mean, the Crossings of Christiana, we took a lead role, but it was also the villages of Crofton, Newtown Square, and a couple other communities that were there initially. But those three communities were actively participating in this entire project, and it's where it is today. If I, as just the general public, as the public is speaking, can say anything, Larry and his team and the developer should be a role model for future projects in Delaware on how they handle themselves and how they intertwine and make the project work and make the communities part of it. The communities really believe that this particular project will upscale the community and hopefully bring the community out of the drugs that it's in. As Larry said, our community is, we kind of feel like we're in a little oasis because the communities around us aren't as well off as we are. There's a lot of drugs, there's a lot of crime, there was a shooting last year, and this particular project, as you saw in the deed restrictions, there's no bars, there's no I don't even know all the bad stuff, the tattoo parlors and all the stuff that, you know, that generates crime. All that stuff is not going to be in this community and or in this commercial project. And so we're just very happy. And I don't know what else to say. So,
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. I concur with your comments about the collaboration with land use and the applicant and the attorney, but also the community, represented by you, are also Key's partners, and thank you for what you and the other leadership brought to the table. The deed restrictions in your favor is something that we wish we saw more of. And then one thing that I just want to say to all of Council, Land Use Department, and others in the room is we had an enlightened applicant who was willing to raise the bar. And, of course, this was a rezoning. Hopefully, with the UDC amendments, we can extract or see these kinds of quality projects even when no rezoning is needed, because a lot of times we end up with seas of asphalt and quality of construction materials that are not the best.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. Good.
Councilwoman Kirkpatrick.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment because it's my district that's been brought up several times in this discussion. And working with the land use attorneys and with the civic groups within Hokesson, we do this for every project. And consequently, by the time it gets to council, there's no sending it back for questions. There's no putting it on, tabling it, putting it on hold, or anything else, because we have vetted that through the community every single time prior to getting here. I think if every, as Councilman Weiner said, whether it's a rezoning or just permit building, if you do this every time, you end up with better projects, you end up with happier communities, and you have a much easier flow through council. So thank you for your participation.
This is clearly a win-win-win. So thank you.
Good. All right.
Could we say
Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, I just want to respond to Councilwoman Kilpatrick. I agree. This was a pleasure for me. It's probably
Thank you, sir.
Relationship-wise with a developer in the community. But I'm going to say this, and since I haven't made any friends in 10 years, I'm not going to start now. One of the big differences between this project and any other project in the 7th District that I've been involved with in 10 years is that people from other areas did not come and try to push their way into this project and impose their desires on the residents that live here and use the formation of conflict in order to try to get that way. That was the difference. The people in this community involved in this project sent the word out loud and clear in the beginning. This is where they live. It was them. They didn't want the outside pushing in. And that is the biggest difference between this and any other projects I've been involved with, is the naysayers, they weren't there. And the community was able to openly voice their concerns and have them addressed.
You have some naysayers. Go ahead.
just to respond to that, and I don't know that this is fully appropriate, but there was a GATA meeting last night, and one of the countywide naysayers was there, and the community very much individually, not the board members of GATA, but the people that were in the audience stood up and said, you never come to a meeting and you agree with anything, you always say no to everything, and that's not how we do things here, and pretty much said goodbye. So, message sent.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Next item on the agenda. I hope we'll enter this next application with as much enthusiasm. Councilman Retta.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Hold on. We have other people want to speak? If anybody else wants to speak, please rise. You know, I need to.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Never mind.
Is this the last? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Roger Turk, and my wife and I owned one of the residences that are now in this development plan. And I will say initially, when they heard about it, we said, you know, we don't really want a commercial development right next door to us, you know. But in working with Mr. Vary and his team, they offered to purchase our property, which we were worried about the value of it being decreased. We had moved out of there about 6 years ago, after all the construction had started on Route 7, and it became, you know, quite inconvenient to have to go down to the traffic light and make a U-turn and come back to your house, or make a U-turn to go to work. And so we moved out, and we looked for a better place. Actually, about 10 years ago, I had talked with my neighbor, Mrs. Kendall, who owned the pizza shop, and I had discussed with her the possibility of doing some offices and some shops, you know, on our two little properties, because I sort of foresaw that things were going commercial rather than residential, and I was trying to save my money. So I was happy when Mr. Vary made an offer for us. I would like to say that something in favor of Mr. Berry is that I understand that he owns the Shops of Hocassin, where, you know, I go to Quinn's for breakfast and go to the Mexican restaurant for some tacos and go pick up my Chinese food takeout there. And he has shown that he is a great developer and a good manager of his properties. And I think that this plan is phenomenal and will be a great asset to the community. And I think it would make Newcastle County a better place to live and work. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Okay. Now, Councilman Co-Chair Weta, your application.
Can we start now? Okay. Thank you. This resolution here is to amend the declaration of a crossing of an easement and shared parking for the tax parcel numbers 09-023.00-051, 09-023.00-055, and 09-017.00-076, which is located along the south side of State Road Route 4 and east side of Harmony Road and White Clay Creek Hunter. And in essence, and to make it a little short, it is where the Bank of America is down by the hospital, and it's going to be a Chick-fil-A and a Wawa. And there's a shopping center already there, and that's what this easement's about. And I believe the applicant's here. If you just want to ask them any questions or...
I think
there's George.
Land use might want to offer a few comments since they've already taken the podium.
I'm not the applicant, but George Haggerty, assistant GM, the land use department. And one of the things I did in my younger days is do object lessons for children. So I'm going to do a quick object lesson on this. Imagine that this chamber was owned by one person, and they sold the portion that you're sitting in to you. And you decided that you had joint rights with both of them, and you said, well, we should take care of our part, and you should take care of your part. And that's essentially what this does. It's kind of what Councilman Reddy said along the way. Jim, if you got a picture real quick, you can see how it was laid out as a one large parcel, and you can see up in the little yellow section there, that was sold off to develop as a Chick-fil-A and a Wawa. That's what the development project came out. And we decided to bring the deed restrictions back as an abundance of caution. We probably could have looked at it and said they really are not applicable, you know, anymore, but essentially the Chick-fil-A folks and the Wawa folks are going to take care of themselves, and the Bank of America folks are going to take care of themselves. I can show you the next slide if you want. You can see that the site is a little closer piece of the site across from the community of Rutherford. There's Donnie Shankey's here this evening with it. And single tenant made a sale, made a development, and they just decided to take and make a split between the obligations and the cross-access easements between the two of them. Short, sweet. Any questions?
Questions from members of council? Okay, how about the applicant?
I thought they were going to share parking, and this isn't enough. I don't know what it is.
Horrible. Thank you, Mr. Tackett. John Tracy from Young Conaway, Stargett and Taylor. Nothing really to add other than to say that the declaration that this parcel is being carved out of governs all of the Bank of America facility that's behind it, the common parking areas, the common drive areas. We do not use any of those items, which is why this parcel is being pulled out. It was essentially something that the closing attorney for the sale of the property wanted to do to clear title to the property, to remove this from the declaration. That's the sole reason this is being done. That, and of course, as George said, it doesn't use any of the facilities regulated by the original declaration anyway.
Councilman Retta.
I'd just like to say that this site where they're going to have the Chick-fil-A and the Wawa has been extensively looked over by Duffield and Associates, and they've created more runoff of water where they can retain it in the different areas, so it won't, I know it was brought up before about across the street, it did different developments, but it has been extensively done, like I said, and there's a lot more to this, basically, where the runoff is gone, it's not going to be gone directly across, it's going to be in holding tanks. And I know Councilman Sheldon's been involved in part of this too. And this declaration has to do with the area of where it says site, that you can see that, and then right alongside it to the left.
Yeah, just to clarify for the record, the project that created the red area site, that was actually approved and recorded back in November of last year. This is, as I said, was something that came through from clearing up title after the property was conveyed, and of course we had to go through the process of the planning board before coming here to amend the declaration. So.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank the Land Use Department for bringing this before the Planning Board and the Land Use Department, having read the recommendation, deed restriction change. I understand Mr. Haggerty's comments that it was an abundance of caution that brought this matter before us, and I think that was a good to err on the side of public openness and transparency.
Additional questions, members of council? Anybody from the public have any comments? We have one resident. Is anybody else going to have any comments? If you are, please line up against the wall here.
Good afternoon. My name is Donnie Shanky. I happen to be the former past president of the Rutherford Civic Association, and I'm currently been a 35-year resident of Rutherford. First, let me digress a little bit and say I really think that the prior project, the Newtown Square project, was very well thought out, and I also appreciate the fact that the developer and the county land use department and the citizens worked together on that. Because we are, Rutherford, I have to say, and the surrounding communities, including HTP, Hillside Heights, Tanglewood, and Pilgrim Gardens communities, which are off of Harmony Road, are very disappointed with our particular project because it came before council before it had any chance to come to the public. But in this particular regard, I understand this is a housekeeping item. We have no objections to this particular ordinance, and we appreciate the fact that it was brought up in front of the planning board, but we are very disappointed that it wasn't brought, the original project itself was not brought to the attention of the community prior to that. So that's what we have to say. Thank you.
Comments from council? Okay. Just like to remind council that on the applications we've seen tonight, that the one from Councilman Smiley is a rezoning that will require a poll vote at the next council meeting. Okay, next on the agenda. I am going to, under presentations, go out of order just a little bit and let Land Use GM Fogarty give a very brief presentation she had, and then I'll come back to the revolving maintenance property fund with Russ.
Yes, she already knew that.
Thank you so much. I wanted to just give the council a very quick update on three items. One is the Unified Development Code, and when we talked, Councilman Tackett is with us now. We talked a little bit about this at the Economic Development Committee meeting, but that there will be a workshop June 24th. We are hoping that each of the council can go to their communities and bring, encourage people to join the county at that workshop. Again, the topics will be the Economic Empowerment District, Neighborhood Conservation, Guiding Principles, and the last one, we had great attendance, almost 80-some people, so we're hoping to have even better attendance at this one. So that's the 24th at 7 p.m. in the same location, the Fire Hall. The next is the Route 9 corridor. I'll hand these out to... Let me see if I could... There we go. Let me take two of them and then you... Two, Janet, thanks. There are two different sets here.
Okay.
No. They're top and bottom, thanks. On the Route 9 corridor, we're delighted that WMAPCO has granted the county $150,000 to do Route 9 from Newcastle up to the Wilmington, city of Wilmington border, to look at the corridor, look at the uses, look at the safety. And we have also are applying for $1 million from the federal government to do the second handout. You see is several intersections to actually do the construction on those intersections all in the Route 9 area. So those are both going forward, and we're very excited that we have gotten that funding, and that will start in September. And the funding is federal funding. The next is Route 141. Jim, can you throw 141 up there? I think we have a map of 141. This I have mentioned to the council before. It's getting fully underway. It'll be a very interesting study because on the one hand we have the UDC process where we're trying to set the principles, set the direction for what will be the trade-offs, what types of jobs do people want, what kind of expectations do people in the neighborhoods have for their living environment and their protection. So one, the UDC will set those general parameters. The 141 study on the first meeting will be September 19th at 5:30 to 8:30 at AI DuPont High School. And that meeting will be informational, but that study will be looking into some of the details as we look at Route 141. If we're going to...
Point of information, did you say September 19th?
I bet I did.
It's a Saturday.
I meant to say June 19th. I apologize. Thank you.
Thank you.
Somebody's listening. Actually... Is it June?
That's a Friday night.
It's Wednesday night. Glasses. Wednesday night, June 17th.
At 5:30 p.m.
5:30 to 8:30 AI DuPont. So now we've got three different dates, but I think the correct date is Wednesday night, June 17th, 5:30. And there will be the first meeting will be general information, but after that, what the council will have in tandem. You'll have the UDC and the policies being set, but then for 141, you will and the community will be looking at what are the trade-offs. If you're going to have jobs, what has to be minimized? How do you put all of this together and create the kind of livable community we've all talked about? There will be no discussion of the Tyler McConnell Bridge. That's definitely not a part of their scope of work. So this is DLDOT, WMAPCO, and Newcastle County. And then the Route 40 Glasgow Avenue, the next meeting is tentatively scheduled for June 10th at Hudson High School. We believe it's also at 5:30. And this meeting will be an opportunity to look at design alternatives for Glasgow Avenue with bike lanes, travel lanes, medians, sidewalks, streetscapes, all of the above. So I think that is, and I know there was a Red Clay meeting last night that was well attended. I think that's everything. So you've got a lot going on. Your UDC, North Claymont, Route 9, 141, 40, Red Clay. So good luck, and thank you.
Ms. Fogarty, I would just ask, would it be possible tomorrow at least to confirm and maybe send us something solidifying these dates?
I understand your concern. We will definitely do that.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, I heard you say who was involved in this. I'm just curious, the funding for all these road studies and the intersection, or is that all the federal money?
Federal.
Is that coming through DLDOT?
It comes from the federal government. It is dispersed through WMAPCO.
Through WMAPCO.
And so WMAPCO actually is the one that manages the meetings. DLDOT is an active participant, as is Newcastle County. So we applied for these grants. We got these grants for 141, for Route 40, for Red Clay, and these are the studies going forward.
You say we. Who's the we?
We, Newcastle County, the Land Use Department of Land Use, applied to WMAPCO and competed with the rest of the region, including Cecil County, for these grants.
So the Land Use Department itself processed the yes. request for the grants and
yes.
everything worked. Okay, thank you.
And the grant for $150,000 for Route 9, we also applied for this year. And we will be applying next year for grants. If you have grants in your area or projects in your area where transportation, corridor study, safety, any of those issues, can work with George and Marco Boyce in terms of applying for them.
So did I just hear you make a commitment that you were going to be here next year?
I've been delighted to be here, and I've extended for a month, and I am not going to be here in June. Thank you.
I'm just listening to the word we.
We.
Additional questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody have anything from the boat? Good. All right. Thank you. All right. Councilman Weiner.
Yes. Behalf of all of council, thank you for your service.
Thank you. It's been really my privilege. Thank you.
Okay. Russ, if you want to come forward and give us an update here, as requested by the council members on this property revolving maintenance fund. And
since we're talking numbers, I thought I'd pass out the spreadsheet I'm using.
Okay.
Can you pass the rest of that stuff out? I'll do it. I'll be generous.
Good afternoon. My name is Russ Morris. I'm from the Office of Finance, and this is just a very quick overview of the Property Maintenance Revolving Fund. Since its inception in FY 2010, there's been a total of $2,202,500 authorized for the revolving fund. Expenditures to date have been a little bit over $1.8 million. You can see that the running total is $1,823,615. Didn't put anything in for FY 16 because as of yet, no authorization has come from council regarding the property maintenance revolving fund. So that will be coming up probably again, on the agenda this fall. And the authorizations and the corresponding revenues are listed right below. Are there any questions?
Russ, what spurred these comments and requests for this presentation was at, not the last council meeting, the council meeting before, I believe, we moved monies out of the general fund into, was it the general fund or was it the reserves?
Reserves.
Reserves into this fund. So the question stemmed from the fees and the fines that are come into the fund and all about funding it.
Yes. Well, I took down the total civil penalty revenues, as you can see on the bottom half, how much we received each year, how much goes into the general fund, and how much has been transferred to the revolving fund. So, for example, in FY 2010, when it first started, the general fund would receive $125,000, and then the next $375,000 would be transferred to the revolving fund for a total of $500,000. Revenues received that year were in excess of the $500,000. There was a total of $611,929. So the excess amount, the surplus, was deposited into the general fund. So the breakdown at the very bottom, you can see, was $236,929 to the general fund, $375,000 to the revolving fund. And that changed a little bit, you know, year by year. The big difference became in FY 2013. The amount to be transferred to the general fund that year was $340,000. However, the total amount collected during the year was only $330,000. So, in fact, there was a deficit. So the dollars that were transferred into the maintenance revolving fund, the $327,500 came from the general fund as opposed to the revenues. And that was the result of salary savings and I believe some salary benefits and I believe some contractual dollar savings in the land use budget. So the land use budget was reduced, and those dollars were then transferred into the property maintenance revolving fund. The next year, you know, after the tickets revolving ticket program had been restarted, there was $200,000 that came in the revenue, but that wasn't sufficient to cover expenses. So an additional $250,000 was taken out of the reserves, you know, in FY14 to cover the expenses related to the property maintenance revolving fund. And again, in this year, in the fall, $200,000 was appropriated out of the revenues for the property maintenance revolving fund, and an additional $300,000 was taken from reserves.
Do you show the reserve on here?
Yes. Well, it shows as general fund. Yeah. When it shows,
are you intertwining them? General fund reserve. That's your, to you. That's the same account.
Well, when we look at this as a transfer of revenue dollars from the general fund to the any grant, it always shows up with this particular object code. So it just shows up as a general fund transfer. Where the revenue comes from, you know, could vary. It could be because of the reduction. In one year, we had a reduction in expenses on the land use side. Past 2 years, it happens that it came from property maintenance from the reserve accounts.
Have you ever removed any money out of the revolving fund?
No, we have not. The only money that's been removed from the revolving fund has been the expenses made by land use for the program. And you can see that the total expenses, on a running basis, are over $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm. Questions from council. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Okay, so if
and
I'm
then Co-Chair Retta.
If I'm understanding this correctly, when I look at the top and I look at the gray box, that we actually brought in more money than we expended. And if I look at this overall, what you're telling us is that there's one object code that designates money coming in, shows it coming in from the general fund, even if it came in from the reserves. So in my mind, I think if you're going to have an object code showing where it came from, it needs to designate whether it came actually from a general fund account or if it came in from the reserves. I thought the purpose of a revolving fund was that all of the money that came into the fund by way of fees and penalties stayed back in that fund so that the next group of people that needed money could take it out, and when the fees and penalties came in, I mean, that isn't that the purpose of revolving? I see no reason why, if on certain years we're making more money out of the fees than what we're expending, I just don't know why it goes into the general fund and then we have to dip into reserves. It makes no sense to me, and it doesn't seem to go with what I would think the definition of revolving fund is.
Well, the part of the general fund revenue budget includes fees, taxes, and this is just one of the small fees that is part of the general fund budget. So each year we have been appropriating $340,000, and that's in this year's the FY16 recommended revenue budget as well. You know, and then the amount in excess of that $340,000 becomes available. You know, and in the past 2 years, legislation has been to transfer $200,000 of those revenues into this revolving fund. So that it can
but then you came back for, what did we do, $500,000? What did we take out of reserves?
$300,000
we took out of reserves? I guess if you're going to have a revolving fund, the point is to try to make it sustainable. I mean, I'm just not getting why we put it, in my mind, it becomes a slush fund again if you're putting money from, that you're taking from fees, you're putting them into one account, but then to fulfill what the original account is, you're taking them out of someplace else. So you're putting extra money into the general fund so it can be spent anywhere, but then we have to replenish this fund with money from the reserves when in actuality it could be sustaining itself.
Well, the operations of the entire program require general fund revenues as well as revenues from the revolving fund, because salaries and benefits of just the inspectors alone would far exceed the amount of ticket revenue that is retained for the general fund.
Okay, for now.
Okay. Russ, do you want to talk quickly about the original ordinance and how it put, what was it, $340,000 into the general fund to actually run the program?
Well, the original ordinance,
well, I think
it was established back in FY 2010, you know, designated $375,000 of the revenues, you know, that were to be collected that year for the property maintenance revolving fund, and then the remainder amount would be deposited into the general fund. You know, and that first year, total ticket revenues were in the neighborhood of $611,000. So $375,000 went into the general fund, and $236,000 went into the general fund. The $375,000 was authorized for expenses that year, but they didn't even come close to spending that money. Expenditures that year were only $120,251. And the second year, an additional $375,000 was authorized, and expenses that year didn't even come close, $269,215. There was an unencumbered balance at the end of that second year of $333,000. So in other words, there was an unencumbered balance that was greater than what they were spending in any single year. That's when the amount to be transferred to the general fund increased and the amount to be used for the property maintenance revolving fund decreased.
Okay. I got Coach Arrieta and then Councilman Smiley.
Thank you. I have to agree with some of the things that Councilwoman said. The object of this was to bring the money in and then put it back in, the revolving fund, to stay there. I believe in the last finance meeting we said we had $860,000 in this because we added the $300,000 to it. So what is the expenses without taking money out of reserve? How much is there for us to pay for revolving fund?
How much
is it costing us to do the revolving fund without taking any money from the reserve or taking any money out of the general fund? How much money is in there?
The balance as of yesterday in the revolving fund, and that includes the $300,000 that was just recently transferred.
Okay, not including that. Take that out.
$16,577.55.
Okay. Now, where did the $860,000 come from? The last meeting we had was $860,000 in there. We added $300,000.
I'm not sure where that $860,000
is. Well, we added $300,000. Subtract $300,000 from $860,000. You got $560,000, right? That's what was left in the revolving fund. Okay?
I'm not sure where that figure came from, Councilman.
It came from the people in land use that told us at the meeting, because I got it written down.
I'm not sure where they got that number then.
Well, they got it from their finances that they have, because that's what they had in the revolving fund was $560,000. We added $800,000 or $300,000 to it. That made $860,000. Why do we have to add that to the $300,000 to that if we don't need it? We're taking it out of reserve, we're putting it back in, and then we're taking it out and putting it back in general fund. It should be what's in the revolving fund should stay there. The only time you need it is when they go broke.
Yeah. We probably will get some clarification on that, but I think that might have been a total of maybe a few years because they conveyed to us that it was going broke, and that's why they needed the $300,000.
Excuse me, Dave, that was last week. That was the last meeting we had. The last meeting we had on that, that's what it was. I wrote it down as they were talking.
Okay, I got Smiley, and then I've got Kilpatrick.
Okay. Let me be clear. Other than 2012, according to the sheet, the expenditures have been below the authorized.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. When I raised the issue, we raised the issue as a council, one of the comments that came back, as you said here, was that, well, initially the county put money in to fund it, and we just heard in the first year they did $600,000+. So they exceeded, and that money went back. I agree, it's a revolving fund. Therefore, the money should recycle back into that fund. My question, greater than that, for me, is if we bring in $100 and we take 50 of that 100 and put it in the general fund, and then 3 months later we need $50 and we go to the reserve account, why aren't we taking the initial 50 back out of the general fund? That's my thing. Where's that 50 going? If there are other departments or other programs that are not faring as well as this, and that's what the general fund is subsidizing, and that's where that money's going, then this council needs to know that so we can look at those programs. That's where I am from day one and have been from day one. I just want a clear path as money in, money out, and why. And quite honest, this doesn't answer my question. I appreciate the work, but it doesn't answer my question.
Councilwoman Kabach.
Thank you.
Do you have a dollar amount that it costs to run this fund from a personnel aspect? If you say there are X number of people that put in X number of hours on this, if they have to allocate their time to different projects, I would like to know how much money it takes to run this fund. And then it seems to me beyond that, we set a dollar amount that we are willing to allow to go out of the revolving fund so that we know what comes in and out in the end basically is zero, or we owe money to it because we can't make it, or they have excess. I mean, I'm going to tell you that this is where my problems come, because I was told that there was going to be, whether we need it or not, I don't know, but I was told there was going to be a study in my area and in Councilwoman Diller's area. Before those contracts were signed, $800,000 was taken out of the Department of Land Use. That was supposed to be a portion of that used for these studies. So if we know that the Department of Land Use is not spending all of their money on personnel, and that $800,000 was transferred over to be spent someplace else, we don't, as a council, have a clue where that money, what it actually was, why it was taken out, and where it was transferred to. If this is part of the Department of Land Use, there are people hired in there. And I think part of this equation needs to be what those people are making with their benefits and everything else that it costs, to have what portion of a person in what category running this department, and if inspectors are needed, what portion of that inspector goes into this. And from there, we figure out how much we're willing to put into this in a year, what it would take to sustain itself, and maybe we subtract, we say, okay, if it's $500,000 in the year, X number is personnel, we know that we then have a certain dollar amount that we can spend on the revolving fund. But this taking stuff out of departments, out of programs, out of projects, and putting it back into the general fund that we never, ever figure out where it's going is crap. We basically need to come to an end, and if this council as a body is accountable for the money within this county, we need to know where it is, and I'm not getting that. And I know it's not your fault. I'm just killing the messenger. I'm sorry.
Councilwoman, I can't speak to, you know, what the percentage of effort apply positions within land use for this, but in code enforcement, there's some 33 positions. In the FY16 budget, 11 of those positions are listed as a certified property and housing maintenance inspectors. So those would be the positions that would be responsible for the...
Yeah, but only a portion of those, each one of those inspectors does the revolving fund, because the other part of those inspectors are house inspectors for permit issues, new building... additions being put on, all of that.
That's why I say I can't speak to the percentage of time, but if I were to take just those 11 positions and ignore everything else within that particular OCA, that's $643,000 when I look at salaries, benefits, and cross charges.
Right, but these...
I just don't know what percentage of their time is spent on this program.
But do these employees, what is it, the Hansen system or whatever you use now, that they have to go in and say, you know, for this hour I worked on this, for that hour I worked on that? I mean, there's got to be a way that you somehow divide up what money goes into what projects by what hours they're logging in they worked on it. I mean, when we divide federal money up with county money, we know that we have to divide up their time and say, yep, they get paid three quarters out of federal money because they work X number of hours on projects that get paid through that, and the other hours on the county projects. I mean, this is something that's tracked, and we should be able to get that answer.
I'm just not sure.
Again, pulling the messenger, I know, I'm sorry.
I'm not sure the extent to which they do that tracking for these particular positions.
And if they don't, then maybe they should, because otherwise we are never going to get a clear handle on what it costs to run this program. And if it costs more to run the program than it's worth, then we have to go back and rethink that.
Councilman Cartier, and then Councilman Smiley.
For me, there's no question that it's an important, this program is a very important program in the county, and I can tell you many times in my district they've done some great work, you know, taking care of recalcitrant, you know, property owners refuse to take care of the property, and it has impacts on neighbors. My concern is, you know, again, sustainability and, you know, where we are. So if we're looking at expenditures, we have authorized like $2.2 million. We expended $1.8, but the revenues are, if I'm reading this chart right, $500,000. Am I reading the chart right?
Well, If you were to do a running total on the revenues,
yes,
it would align up with the authorized running total. So if council has authorized $2.2 million for this program, mm-hmm. revenues for this program are also $2.2 million.
But the revenues are not coming entirely from the abatements, ticketing, you know, revenues from the violators. We've been throwing subsidy dollars at this.
That's correct.
Okay.
You know, to the extent that money has been transferred either from salary savings and benefit savings and land use and in some cases from reserve accounts, that would be $650,000, close to $1 million.
Okay. Do you have any idea how many we go in, let's say, we put a roof on a house. We, property owner either refuses to pay us or for whatever reason we don't recover that cost immediately. We put a lien on that property, correct?
Yes, we did.
So what is the outstanding, maybe the follow-up here is, you know, what is the outstanding, you know, uncollected receivables? You know, I guess that's another part of this.
I'm not sure how much they have as unreceivables. I do know that in terms of the expense recoveries, when we place a lien and we then do recover, there's recoveries that it varies from year to year. We budget $178,000 a year in FY 2014, the last year that I've got complete numbers for, that was $197,980. The year before, $155,000. So I'd say that it varies. The revenues received back into the general fund from those expenses would vary between $150,000 to
$200,000. So on a yearly basis, we have it would be useful for me to know how much, and I don't know what the technical accounting term is, but, you know, uncollected liens, yeah. I guess, would be.
Our receivables.
Yes. Receivables. Yeah. That is outstanding because of this program. Because at some point, we got to, when you talk about revolving funds and making it self-sustaining, that's part of the picture here that, you know, I don't think you're. Balance sheet is ever going to, you know, no. Isn't reflecting that.
It could be 20, right.
You know.
Right.
Wouldn't you agree, sir?
Yes. Obviously, the recoveries, you know, are a source of revenue for the county. And what percentage of those that we are, in fact, recovering would be a good question. And I just don't have...
Mm-hmm.
Information on what their total receivables are for that particular line. I could contact
that issue goes to you know the amount of subsidy and sustainability of the program, and I think for a lot of members here the idea is the program should kind of pay for itself and expand based on the amount of you know abatements or violators and tickets, and it seems like here too as well we had a year where you know we had a real drop off
Well, there 2012. Was one year where there was some changes. There was a legal challenge to the
right.
ticketing program.
Right.
And council changed the program. And so, of course, during that year, mm-hmm. you know, revenues from tickets dropped significantly. That's why the land use department came up with a proposal to reduce their operating to the tune of $275,000 so that those funds could be transferred into the property maintenance revolving fund to maintain the program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
There's no questions.
Yeah, I was already recognized. I don't want to belabor the point. I don't want to keep the public and all the council here any later than they have to. But I want to make it clear. For me, the issue is not the revolving fund. The revolving fund and the touching of the reserves to subsidize it was merely the match that lit the flame. We have a lot of good programs in the county, not just the revolving fund. My concern is, where's the money going? Follow the bouncing buck, to put it that way. So maybe in the future what we want as a council is, if you're coming, I don't say you particularly, if we're going to get legislation that says we need to transfer $2 million out of the reserves into this program, then attached with that is a documented, substantiated itemization of, to that point, here was the revenues, here was the expenditures, here's where, if the revenues exceeded the expenditures, here's where they went, and here's why we need the reserves. Not just, we're transferring $500,000, and it is what it is. I want to track, for now on, anything coming out of the reserves, we need to track the money. If it's a new program and we're starting it, fine. But we need to track the money. If it's losing money, like I said, I'm not saying I'm going to say, no, we shouldn't have a revolving fund. But when I've got to go out there and talk to people about the finances of the county, I have a right as a council person. They have a right as a member of the public to know what the programs are costing and how they're being funded. Not we take $800,000 out, transfer it into the general fund. 6 months later, we go to reserve for $500,000 to help meet payroll. Where'd the $800,000 go to went in the general fund? And again, that goes beyond the revolving program here. So we'll deal with it down the road, I guess.
Okay.
Still waiting on answers.
Anything under other?
Next public. Time we're in here, could we have some heat? No, I'm miserable. Jesus, this is miserable.
Got a hold on. All right.
Motion adjourned.
Well, second.
On favor.
Yes.
All right. So, what did you say? You're miserable.
I am.
It's cold. Oh, it's just the cold does that to you?
My nose is starting to run all of a sudden now.
I have three layers. I have a